It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy's here. Renee's here. Alex is here with lots to talk about. Tim Cook's beautiful memo to the staff. Mark Zuckerberg's less than memorable response. The fixes in iOS and macOS to some pretty severe flaws. And the future of WWDC. Alex has some ideas. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Mac Break Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 716, recorded Tuesday, June 2nd, 2020. Not constrained by time and space. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Epson's EcoTank printers. These days, when many of us are working from home or helping our kids with homework, we need the right printer. The Epson EcoTank makes it easy. Add the Epson EcoTank printer to your online shopping list at Amazon, Dell, Micro Center, and Epson.com/EcoTankLeo. And by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Get 20% off plus free shipping at Manscaped.com. Use the code MACBREAK. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And we try to pay no attention to the news from the rest of the world. Not an easy thing to do. I know my pal Renee Ritchie suffering a little bit right now in Montreal. I could see your posts. You're down, and I understand it, man. I understand.
I have it so much easier than anybody sacrificing eyes, limbs, or lives right now. So I just want to support as many people as I can, as much as I can, in however many ways I can.
And you're in a country that's marginally more effective, but I don't know if it is, actually, after what you've told me about Quebec.
Quebec is an anomaly.
It's a struggle there, too. Anyway, Renee,
we're COVIDing wrong. Yeah. Don't COVID like we are.
Yeah, I mean, first the pandemic, then George Floyd, and all hell broke loose, and now the tanks
if
are going to roll
an
into
alternate
our
timeline,
nation's cities and states.
If this was an alternate timeline, several of us or the people we work with would all have been arriving, potentially, if it was this week, arriving in San Jose for a keynote yesterday.
Oh, WWDC.
It's a very strange world.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very strange world we live in. If not for COVID.
Yeah. Actually, we'll talk about WWDC in just a second, but let me introduce the rest of the panel. Andy Iannocco also joining us from his bunker somewhere deep within the confines of New England. Good to see you.
We have water access if we have to escape. That's a good place to you know, Newfoundland is a very, very long swim, but if things get any worse,
I'm
willing
to chance
it.
Did they close the tunnel to Newfoundland? I thought you guys could just walk.
If there's a tunnel to Newfoundland and I haven't been told about it, I'm going to be pretty cross with a lot of people.
It's a long walk. Also,
we'll get you out, Andy.
Thank you very much.
There should
Renee,
be a tunnel
always got
to
my
Newfoundland.
Back.
I think there should be.
I'm willing to start one.
Tunnel. I think it's a project.
That's got to be. Yeah. That's got to be a half as interesting episode, like the tunnel that goes through the Bering Strait to Alaska, from Russia to Alaska never been built. It's just got to be one of those stories.
Yeah. Also with us, Alex Lindsay. If anybody is in a evil mountain lair, it's Alex Lindsay. He is. I'm surprised he doesn't have a sliding mountain door on his fortress of solitude.
No, it's pretty. We're just pretty far out.
Yeah,
so it's pretty removed from everything.
It's all virtual. It's
exactly.
CGI.
There's actually no house. I'm sitting in a.
Alex
has been in
Mars for a generation.
Parking lot. Yeah, exactly.
He's been living on potatoes for the last 16 years.
Exactly.
By the way, Steve Carell, have you watched Space Force yet?
I tried. No. I didn't. It wasn't me. It wasn't for me.
It wasn't for you.
I ended up on Mythic Quest and I enjoyed myself.
Oh, really? I did. Finally, thanks to you, I think, watched the additional episode of Mythic Quest that they recorded using Zoom.
Yeah.
That was really well done. That was easily the best episode of Mythic Quest.
It was the weird fifth episode. It has nothing to do remotely with anybody.
What was that, by the way? Who were those people?
They were the people who owned the studio before they.
It wasn't Ian moved in. It wasn't anybody in the current times. It was just two random game developers who fell in love at a movie store 20 years ago and created a game studio, and then that was it.
Well, and they started with Montreal, which then funded them, became a huge game funder, and then Mythic Quest was funded by Montreal, which I'm guessing is Ubisoft. Like, I don't know if that's thinly veiled or not. Right. And then they had the facilities and the income to fund Mythic Quest.
Yeah. I just didn't get into Mythic Quest at all, but I had to say, you're right, the fifth episode and that last, which was an afterthought. Rob McElhenney, is that his name?
Yeah. With 40 iPhones and 20 pairs of AirPods.
Called Apple, said, I got this idea. I know the season's over. They only did 9, but we could do a 10th. Just send us iPhones and AirPods. And we talked about this last week, and I hadn't watched it. You recommended it, and it was.
And Craig really Mazin got involved somehow, and then just who did the Russian nuclear fall, Chernobyl. He's actually on the show as well as consulting on the show.
Oh.
He plays the new tester, the new video game tester.
Oh,
dude.
That's him in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. That's Craig Mazin. Yeah. Oh. He's a producer of Chernobyl and the consulting producer on this show. And he actually got involved and I won't ruin it, but it's hilarious.
The end is spectacular. If you like OK Go, you'll love the final scene. That's all I'm going to say. It's really.
And if you've ever worked in the industry or tangentially to the industry, it's not as far. The show is not as far fetched as it might seem.
Yeah. No kidding. No kidding. Anyway, condolences to all of our friends all over the world who are, suffering through the pandemic, and then to our friends in the United States, especially our black friends who are suffering even more these days. It's been a really rotten week. What can I say? You know, I thought briefly about blacking out. The whole music industry is blacked out. In fact, if you go to iTunes now, actually Apple's response is kind of interesting. Is it the same in Canada? It might just be here in the US. I don't know. But if you go to Beats One, it redirects you to a channel featuring African-American music. And then if you try to listen to a song by white people that was originally by a black artist, they redirect you, right? They redirect you to the black artist.
Hmm.
It's an interesting...
Yeah, it's the same in Canada.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
This is right on the front page of Apple Music, if you just open it up. And steadfast support of the black voices that define music, creativity, and culture, we use ours. This moment calls upon us all to speak and act against racism and injustice of all kinds. We stand in solidarity with black communities everywhere. #, the show must be paused. And that's what the music industry is doing on this Tuesday.
Yeah.
#, Black Lives Matter, which I've been informed, Mike told me, not to use that on your social media posts for the pause,
yes,
because we don't want to junk up the important Black Lives Matter feed at this time with just blank screens and things. And then if you press the Listen Together button, you get a special black-focused Beats radio station. I've got Solange on right now. So that's, I think, cool. Tim Cook also sent a memo. I mean, it feels like we're dealing with multiple. This timeline's getting worse, Renee. Can you please get us out of it?
I'm trying. I mean, like Tim Cook, Satya Nadella, most of the big tech companies. I mean, I think a little bit Amazon, a lot Facebook are the big exceptions, but the other companies seem to really be stepping up and trying to use whatever they can as a platform. Microsoft has been outstanding. To try to bring people as much together as they can.
Well, and that's why it's a little weird that Facebook, in fact, Facebook's staff is getting more and more irate at Mark Zuckerberg's unwillingness to do anything.
They're quitting en masse.
They're leaving. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty disgusting. Especially when you'd like to have leaders of these quasi-governmental scale tech companies in scale and power, you'd like them to do the right thing on their own. You would also think that they're smart enough that when they see that every single one of the other tech companies that are operating at that same scale have also stepped up to one degree or another, you don't have the you've lost the ability to say, well, we feel as though it's not our responsibility to. And really the signature phrase in any statement from Facebook is not our responsibility. We're not responsible. So, yeah, this is as much as.
Yet they ban female nipples, not male nipples, but female nipples. There are some things we will ban.
It's difficult if you ban anything. It's difficult to say, well, we should ban this and not this. And I think what Zuckerberg wants to do is say, we're a platform not responsible for any content on the platform. In a way, I kind of understand it. This is something Twitter has been trying to do for years and years and years. It is very challenging. It's very difficult because everybody agrees there's a line. You know, you're not going to have terrorist organizing and recruitment groups on Facebook. There's a line. It's the argument is where is the line? And as soon as you say there is a line, that's when it really becomes difficult.
But I think the issue with Zuckerberg is not that, you know, that you can argue, you can have a relativistic, you know, almost inhuman argument about the morality of those two positions, but he's not consistent. He is completely not consistent about it. He's completely hypocritical about it. And at the same time, all these documents are leaking showing that Facebook was told that the more extremism they promoted, the bigger their platform would become. And they chose to embrace the extremism.
They actually
that whole background paints what, again, like you can never believe what people say. People will say anything. They will wrap themselves in any trappings, conduct any theater. All you can do is judge them by what their actions and their inactions. And both his actions and inactions are a fairly horrific, paint a fairly horrific picture about what a tech company can be in the wrong hands.
Yeah. Compare and contrast to what Twitter did, where not 2 days after causing a ruckus by saying, OK, well, the president lied about mail-in voting, we're just going to put a link underneath it that says get the facts about mail-in voting. That doesn't say the president is lying. It's as mild a rebuke
as you could do.
Yeah. Exactly. And of course it sent Trump into an immediate executive order because this is something that really, really matters to him. But in the face of that, in that environment where the ink was still wet on this executive order, Twitter said, okay, you know what? This tweet about when the shooting starts, this is off the rails crazy. This is inciting violence. We are now at the point where we are leaving this up so everybody can see exactly what this man is saying, but we are labeling that this is something that would immediately get a user banned for inciting violence. This is pulling the tiger's tail and not caring. This is bravery. This is the opposite of what Facebook is doing, which is it is a problem we have to figure out as a service like Facebook or like YouTube or like Twitter, where you're allowing people to speak on your dime, to figure out at what point should you exert control over what's said. But what Zuckerberg is doing is saying the easiest thing for us to do is nothing at all. And not only that, but we're gonna take that as something that we should be praised for. This man needs to go someplace and think about what he's doing to this world.
And his speech with the civil liberties people yesterday was also fairly non-heartening.
The civil rights organizations that met with Zuckerberg said his explanations were, quote, incomprehensible. Go ahead, Alex.
Because they're not true, and it's very hard to keep that many lies, even if you're lying to yourself. It's very hard to keep that many lies bouncing around your head at the same time. Yeah.
Go ahead, Alex.
I think the fundamental thing we need to take away is that we shouldn't believe anything that we see anywhere. Like, you know, and like not on its face value. There should be no single point of truth. You know, there isn't any.
But Alex, that ignores the power that these platforms have to persuade people.
I agree with you. I agree with you. So I'm not disagreeing with that. But we have to keep on telling my kids get it almost constantly.
Absolutely.
Like, don't believe anything that you see. You know, until you see it three or four different places that agree to it, until you've cross-checked it and it doesn't mean anything, it doesn't exist. You know, we used to say that until something exists in three places when we were making copies of files, until something exists in three places, it doesn't exist. And in my case with news, until I've heard it from a whole bunch of different places that don't agree with each other on a day-to-day basis. You know, I think about it very warily. You know, like,
it's,
you know,
really
that,
easy,
that's mainstream news.
I think that minimizes the risk, because it's very easy to – I went back to Facebook during COVID, which I regret, and I'm going to immediately delete my account. But it's very easy to get the same misguided viewpoint from what looks like three good sources.
Okay, well,
it's very persuasive.
What I'm saying, three disagreeing sources. So if I see something on CNN, Fox, you know, NPR, Al Jazeera, whatever they agree on is probably somewhere near the truth. What, you know, everything else is their own opinion about that. And we just have to, you know, like you have
really
to take things
that, down the universe of truth there, Alex.
Well, no, I'm just giving that as an example. I mean,
I don't think you could get those five sources to agree on the fact that Elon Musk launched a rocket last week.
The sun came up this morning.
Again, they'll agree on the basic facts. You know, they won't agree on what those facts mean. You know, and so the thing is that and even then, you know, I take everything with a grain of salt. I'm not saying that Facebook and Twitter don't need to do more work on what they're doing. I'm saying that they're never going to fix it, ever.
I agree.
And so the idea that we think that somehow they're going to fix this someday or they should fix it is Pollyanna. It is a pipe dream. Like, it is never going to happen. What's important is for our and they should keep doing that. I'm not disagreeing with you that they shouldn't take more responsibility they're in a big mess and they don't know how to get out of it. And they're not going to get out of it anytime soon. And it's never going to be right, because the news hasn't been right for most of our lifetime or all of our lifetime. I mean, I'm in the middle of the news, you know, serving them files and, you know, putting all this stuff in and looking at all this stuff. They're not right half the time, you know. And so the thing is that we just have to understand that we have this thing like we should believe, you know, everything that we should be able to take it as a trusted source. Nothing is a trusted source.
So the one thing I'd add to that is
This is our opinion. This is our discussion about what that looks like.
The only thing I'd add to that is that we have absolutely unprecedented access to primary sources. I don't have to trust the reporting of anybody. I can see what most people are saying directly on Twitter. And that alone is so horrifying that it's
I think it's part of what's undermined our belief in the press. I mean, there's been a lot of rhetoric, but I think it's also because we don't have to believe them. You know, like we can see things that very quickly that go against whatever they're saying, whether that's liberal or conservative or whatever. And I think that we just have to really understand that as a society, we have to become very, and I think that it's healthy for us to become very untrusting of everything that comes out of everybody's mouth, you know, and research it and think about it and be critical about it. And all these services, including the news, needs to be better at it.
Of that attitude is QAnon.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, a lot of people who say, I don't trust anything. I'm going to do my own research. In fact, that's, by the way, the motto of QAnon. Do the research.
And Facebook, apparently. Because their trending stories have nothing to do with the reality of what we saw this week.
And where are you going to get these original sources if you don't get them through the media? Do you have some magical system?
I listen to a lot of news from a lot of different sources
that's
opposed.
A good process.
Listening to the same, like if you're really into MSNBC or really into Fox or really, you're not going to know what's going on. Like, you have to listen to all of them to some degree. Now I have, you know, so it there's some that I can listen to more than others, but I also, when you listen to all of that, I can listen to something knowing that it's a conservative filter or knowing that it's a liberal filter, you know, like I can listen through it and I can hear the words that they're using, like literally the words that they're using are specifically liberal or conservative, because they'll term something a very specific way. And so inside of that, I'm constantly breaking down every piece of news that I look at, you know, because as soon as you say something,
do you think everybody can do that?
No, I don't think everybody can do it. I'm saying that, but I think that it is a skill that we need to be working on. Not everybody can write either. It doesn't mean that we don't teach them how to write.
Right.
But I think that, but we're not going to fix it. Like, I think that for us to think that somehow we're going to fix the social networks so that they're suddenly true, the news isn't that good either. Right. So the thing is that the social networks are never going to get fixed. So we have to be thinking about, from a personal accountability perspective with our kids, with ourselves, we have to start approaching it that way. I'm not saying that it's going to fix it.
Of Facebook? What filter do you apply to Facebook?
Chaos. I mean, it's not. I don't think it's one. I don't think. I think that Facebook is money.
I think we actually don't know because there is an algorithm. That news feed is very algorithmic. It's more.
Isn't it simple though? It's like they convert attention into money, so they will do absolutely anything to get the most attention possible to make the most money possible.
And we're going to end the conversation pretty soon because it's not really our beat. But I think honestly, we don't know what Facebook's algorithms biases are. I think you could say they're biased toward engagement. I'm not fully convinced that's the case.
I think they're biased in trying to, you know, it's view time. So they're biased on how long, you know, based on what you're looking at and what you seem to like, what can I give you more of, you know, in that area? You know, like, I think
how can I extract more information from you? It's like classic drip marketing on Hulk serum.
I don't think the algorithm has any real bias one way or the other. I think Facebook as a group is probably a set of people are probably, you know, as a group is probably more liberal than conservative.
Oh, I disagree. I disagree. Mark Zuckerberg is on the phone with President Trump on Friday. I completely disagree. Yeah.
And Peter Thiel is on his board.
Peter Thiel's on the board. And I think you could very clearly, one of the reasons that Trump was anxious to censure Twitter and not Facebook is President Trump knows that his campaign will be using Facebook heavily as it did last time. Yeah. Brad Parscale is a master of Facebook. I disagree. I don't think it's immediately obvious what Mark Zuckerberg's interests are.
You could refuse to take money for political ads and refuse to allow your social graph to be targeted for political or opinion-based marketing, and that would probably remove a lot of the danger.
I think it's actually simplistic to say he's just after the money. He's made a lot of money. He doesn't need the money now.
That's true.
I think that he's an example of what happens when somebody makes an ungodly, and I mean the word ungodly, amount of money and accrues an ungodly amount of power before they spend any time in the real world without that kind of money and without that kind of power. Because it basically
it works.
It's an apotheotic sort of moment where you believe that the reason why Facebook is a success is because I have godlike powers. I understand things the way that few people in this world do. And therefore, if I say that this is how that Facebook is not being is not a damaging influence upon the world, and that we're not doing bad things with our product, then obviously obviously all these people who are complaining just don't understand the world the way I do. I think he's an arrogant SOB. And I think that the idea of having no limits on his accountability is not the way to go.
And having said all that, it's still intractable. I agree with Alex in the ones thing. Yes. And it's never going to get fixed because it's intractable.
But that doesn't mean that we don't build cars with seat belts and airbags and crumple zones. We're not going to stop people from getting killed, but we can do something to mitigate the damage or at least document the damage so we're aware of the influence that this sort of thing is having on us collectively.
So compare and contrast Mark Zuckerberg's response with Tim Cook's memo, which I thought was beautiful. And here's an example of a guy who is the opposite, I think, Andy. His guy who grew up in the real world, right?
Yeah.
And he may be very wealthy now, but I don't think it's colored his perception of the world.
And he's not founder wealthy, and he grew up in a time and a place where he wasn't even accepted. So great. And also in a time when Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King and people were hugely influential.
Yep. He wrote, "Team," this is the memo he sent to everybody at Apple, "right now there is a pain deeply etched in the soul of our nation and in the hearts of millions. To stand together, we must stand up for one another and recognize the fear, hurt, and outrage rightly provoked by the senseless killing of George Floyd and a much longer history of racism. We've seen progress since the America I grew up in, but it's similarly true that communities of color continue to endure discrimination and trauma. I've heard from so many of you that feel afraid. We can have no society worth celebrating unless we guarantee freedom from fear for every person who gives this country their love, labor, and life. At Apple, our mission has and always will be to create technology that empowers people to change the world for the better. But together we must do more today. Apple's making donations to a number of groups." I'm editing as we go along, by the way. There's a lot more. Including the Equal Justice Initiative, a nonprofit committed to challenging racial injustice. For the month of June and in honor of the Juneteenth holiday, we'll also be matching 2-for-1 all-employee donations to Benevity. But this is also compare and contrast with Steve Jobs, who, to our knowledge, never once contributed to a charity, and certainly
so
never
he did, my understanding
that.
Is he did, but he his privately, philosophy, his privately, base philosophy yeah. was different. He did not believe he had this theory that you should not pimp your charity
I
or
agree.
It removed the motivation for the charity. Where Tim Cook feels that if you don't, then you fail to inspire others, and it's one I think one of their biggest differences.
Yep. But he also did not make it easy as an employee of Apple, as I understand it, to participate either, right? I mean, this is has set up all of these processes for employees to donate and participate. He goes on, this is a moment when many people may want, and this one is, I think, important for all of us, many people may want nothing more than a return to normalcy or a status quo that is only comfortable if we avert our gaze from injustice. As difficult as it may be to admit, that desire is itself a sign of privilege. George Floyd's death is shocking and tragic proof we must aim far higher than a normal future and build one that lives up to the highest ideals of equality and justice. Very powerful stuff from Tim Cook, and beautifully written, beautifully said. Just inspiring, to be honest. So, well done. Mm. Well done. There is news, but this is a challenge for us on all the shows of how I know that for many, we're an escape, right, from reality, that we all want that normalcy that Tim was talking about. But I think we also have to acknowledge the world we're in and the pain that we're all, many of us in. And I don't think we should bury that either. So,
yeah.
But we are going to talk about Apple in other ways as well. In fact, we all got an update, didn't we? Suddenly an update to 13.5, which we had gotten days earlier. Is this, I bet you know, Renee, is this the fix to the jailbreak?
Yeah, so I mean, it depends on how you want to look at it, because a lot of people who jailbreak will just see this as Apple ruining their fun, or people who are amateur researchers will look at it as Apple closing down their ability to do amateur research, where people on the maybe the InfoSec or maybe on Apple side will say that, you know, this vulnerability has been exposed. And while jailbreaking is fairly benign, there are people who are going to use these exploits for much more dangerous things, and it'd be irresponsible just to leave them in the wild.
It breaks the jailbreak, right?
I believe so. I haven't personally tested it, but that's what I heard people saying. I might be wrong, but I believe that's what the current chatter was.
Yeah. 13.5.1. There may be other things in there, but the fact that it came so quickly on the heels of 13.5. Although, Alex, you've always said, do not install the first update. In fact, you say don't install the second update, right?
Yeah, I usually try to stay an update behind if I can, but mostly you just let it, especially when updates come out, you don't just go, oh, I'm going to immediately jump on that one. You usually want to let that sit and you know, stew for a couple days or maybe a week, especially if you're in any kind of production. You want to just kind of like let it sit there for a second and see if anybody finds anything before you jump on it. In production, of course, when we're in like a film production or a large production, we won't update anything for a year, 2 years. I came out of Star Wars and I had a whole bunch of apps that didn't even look the same as I was working in, because you don't want anything to change. But in at a home environment, I would say that, you know, we update things pretty late. We let things kind of figure their way out.
Our Premiere, our editor's machines, I don't know what version of Windows 10 they're on, but it ain't the current one. That's for sure.
Right, right.
Yeah, once you get, let especially people like once me you and Leo take the hit first.
Update yourself. Yeah, yeah. Let us know how it works.
Once you find a stable one, then the thing is, I look at everything of like the new update. I always look at what are the new features. Is that something I really need? Yep. And then I start thinking about it. But if it's not something that I really need, I'm like, I'll just wait. Mine works just fine right now.
It's not new emoji. You wait. That's the rule, right? It's not the new emoji. Yeah. You got to wait.
Yeah, I gotta Apple have the new emoji.
Apple makes it so difficult to downgrade. If you realize that upgrading your device or your computer was a horrendous mistake, and you wish that Superman would fly in reverse around the planet and make your computer work the way it did yesterday before you did that awful thing, i.e., click that button that Apple really, really decided that you should be clicking. Apple makes it so hard for you to redo to revert to a previous version of the OS that you really do have to be that careful about it. I still on my Macs, I still have not upgraded to the latest OS because
really
I'm
you got 32 bit stuff you want to keep or
no? Well, it's chiefly because everything that I'm using works great. Yeah. I'm aware that it's not so much the 32-bit stuff that could break so much as requiring updates to some old apps that I have that may or may not actually function in this new version of the OS. And basically, unfortunately, Apple kind of spent its it kind of lost its AA bond gold rating in terms of software updates a while ago. Where it really used to be the gold standard, where just upgrade. They've tested it really, really well. They're not going to be any really big showstoppers at this point in the testing process. Give it a week, but after a week, when there's nothing in the news about how hard drives got reformatted or anything like that, go right ahead. Now it really is. Unless you can set up an entire separate Mac with the new operating system, do a complete restore of a backup on your primary work machine on this, and make sure that every single app that you count on absolutely works, whether it's signed or unsigned, then you really have to be very, very careful about making that decision.
Well, then you probably don't care that Apple also updated Catalina yesterday.
Yeah.
10.15.5 supplemental update, security update 2020-003 High Sierra update came out for Catalina and I guess High Sierra. What I love about this, if you look at the Apple release about what was patched, an application may be able to execute arbitrary code with kernel privileges. A memory consumption issue was impressed with improved memory handling and uncover, which that's the jailbreak. But why would they patch that in Mac OS? Did you need a flaw in Mac OS to take advantage of it?
I don't know for sure, but it could also be that there's shared code that it could be code in anything that they need to patch that's shared between the two systems. Ever since they established a core OS team, that team builds a lot of things that are both like everything from APFS to, you know, just so much of the stuff is shared code now that if there's a flaw in one, it's worth patching it in another.
So here's the installation guide. Yeah, you do have to use the Mac, it looks like, in Uncover, and then connect iOS via USB. So to install Alt Store, there's several ways to do this. So I guess that's part of why Uncover is in the security update, CVE-2020-9859. It's not the only security flaw. Apple apparently paid a researcher $100,000. Yeah. Not the highest bug bounty, but a pretty good size, good chunk of a bug bounty. For a sign-in with Apple bug. Bhavuk Jain got the bug bounty because he discovered it and did the right thing, which is went to Apple instead of, you know, saving it for Pwn2Own or something, which I'd be tempted to do. Jain said the vulnerability that he discovered resided in the way Apple was validating a user on the client side before initiating a request from Apple's authentication servers. So there's a token, and this JSON web token, JWT, could be stolen, I gather, and used to authorize somebody else.
Basically, the server was not verifying that the person requesting the token was the same ID as the ID that was being used to log in.
Ah.
So basically, it could present one set of credentials, and then another Apple ID could then receive that token and basically get all the permissions and get all the ID authentication that was coming to the original user.
You could forge a JWT, basically.
Yeah,
and thereby do anything you want. Anyway, yeah, it's fixed.
That's a bit of a problem.
It's fixed. We could talk about it now because Apple gave them the money.
And I believe there was no instance of it actually happening.
No, yeah, it was a zero day, or it wasn't a zero day. It was prevented from being a zero day. So this is why, you know, you pay a bug bounty. You want these guys to do that. And because it's such a competitive market these days for exploits, there's so much money to be made from both legitimate people, including the company that you're exploiting, and illegitimate people who want those exploits to sell them to
governments,
nation states,
yeah. the people who sell them yeah. to governments and nation yeah. states.
Yeah. Perhaps they should sweeten the deal by also offering them a mug. That's only available to bug bounty people.
Or just like a t-shirt. Oh. Limited edition,
you know, a challenge coin. They need to have an Apple challenge coin.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's a great idea. A lot of people would.
How'd you get that challenge coin? I found a bug in iOS.
I decided not to bring the entire fake system down and watch the world burn around me.
I fixed OpenSSL.
I just fixed that. No big deal. Hey, let's take a little break, and then I do want to talk about WWDC, which we would be fondly enjoying right now, but will be soon in a different way, and what they might announce, including iOS 14. Some news about that, at least a rumor about that coming out. Our show today brought to you by Epson and those great EcoTank printers, as many of us work from home or have to teach our kids at home. And you need a nice printer, but color, right? But you have to worry about running out of ink. Where are you going to get an ink cartridge these days? You want to make sure you have the right printer. It's the one we have at home, the Epson EcoTank. It makes it easy. These super tank printers have supersized, easy to fill tanks, and they come with a ridiculous amount of ink when you buy them. Enough to print thousands of pages, in most cases a couple of years. I'm still using that first set of ink bottles. But when you do need to replace it, those easy color-coded ink bottles make it very simple to refill, and then you get another couple of years, more thousands more pages. There's Shaq marveling at the ink bottle refilling. He really is enjoying the refilling of the ink bottle on that website there. No more rushing to the store to replace an ink cartridge in between print jobs. Actually, when I got the EcoTank, I think I bought a second set because I figured, well, now I'll have 4 years. Kiss expensive ink cartridges goodbye, because EcoTank is changing the way people print. Go ahead, print all your work reports, your task lists. Do those kids' assignments in color. They're going to wow the teacher. EcoTank makes it easy. So add it to your online shopping list so you too can, like Shaq, just fill and chill. He's a very sweet guy, I got to say. But he's big. He's scary. He makes that printer look kind of tiny. Check out the Epson EcoTank printers. You'll find them at Amazon, Dell, Micro Center, and of course, Epson.com/EcoTankLeo. EPSON.com/EcoTankLeo. I've been an Epson user since my first computer with my dot matrix Epson MX80 printer. We've come a long way, let me tell you. I love those Epson EcoTank. I got two of them. Epson, exceed your vision. Okay. I like the front page with the Memojis at WWDC. We are going to be all virtual. Yes?
Yes.
Do we know anything? Should I download the app? What should I do?
Yeah, if you want to enjoy the work of one Serenity Caldwell, you should absolutely download that app.
What? What did Serenity do in the app?
Serenity is, I forget her exact title, but she's on the evangelist team and doing content for the developer app.
Oh, so like video content or drawings?
Like blogging writing? And all sorts of amazing. Nice. Yeah, all sorts of amazing stuff. So if you've been dying for some Serenity Caldwell, I have been. She is, yeah.
We were talking earlier on iOS today how so many people we know have gone to Apple and then just disappeared. But it happens. It's just because they're big companies. Like, we have a number of friends who've, like Alan Malventano, who've gone to work for Intel, and they just...
Then there's Christina Warren, who is bigger and brighter than ever.
Yeah, no kidding. I like that. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, she's not disappeared within the confines of Microsoft.
Yeah.
But so many people have gone. I mean, I never hear from Nathan Oliver S. Giles anymore. I don't know what's going on with him. I think Apple probably...
Microsoft and Google seem to be very, like, they seem to have no problem. I can't say no problem, but they seem much easier about people podcasting and being on social networks. And Apple and some other companies seem to have much more. Like, I know if you work at Apple, you can do like a video game podcast, but like, they don't want to hear you talking about technology just in case.
Can't come on Twit, that's for show.
Well, it's weird because, like, when you talk to them, they actually live in the future. Like, they forget what devices are public or not, what the names of things are that are public or not. Yeah. And it's awkward for them.
That's actually why I never do NDAs or embargoes, because I can't remember when I know and don't know. And I want to talk about everything. And when you have like 20 or 30 hours on the air every week, you pretty much have to talk. You have to basically dump every bit of your mind out into the world. So it's better that I don't, better that I shouldn't know. Lisa's good. She says, I will sign it and I won't tell you. Okay.
What you don't know can't hurt her.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's good. I'm going to get her a t-shirt that says that. That's good. So what the best thing I think about developer conferences going online is we really enjoy Microsoft Build. Everybody's invited. What's normally a very hard ticket to get now is everybody's got one, right?
So I don't know if the ticketed part changes because I think you have to win one of those little contests to get the denim jackets this year. But like Apple, for a few years now, Apple's been amazing at posting, like live streaming a lot of the stuff, especially
after
stuff that
the
comes from the bigger conference. Well, even some of the stuff has been live streamed, like not just the keynote, but State of the Union and whatever has been in that big central hallway has almost always been live. And then the rest will be released later. And even for the last couple of years, they've had some sessions that were only live to tape. Like nobody could go to them. There were so many sessions, they couldn't fit them on the schedule, so they would just come out virtually and you'd have to go and check the listings to see what were the unaired shows were. So that part doesn't change. It's just like what's interesting to me is some of the biggest value for the people who do get tickets is going to the developer, the design, and the app store labs where they can talk to the people who maintain or either wrote or maintain the code or will give them design reviews or will give them advice about how to sell on the app store. And that part, you know, it was famous. There's 1,000 Apple engineers here, and that part doesn't scale. And, you know, maybe Alex knows how to virtualize that way better than I can imagine. But it's hard for me to predict. Like, is it going to be like a Zoom call in batches of 300? Like, I don't know how that's going to be handled.
You know who might know? Alex?
It'll all be on Alex's streaming show every morning.
You're muted, Alex.
So the thing is that we're... One of the things we really experiment with a lot in the office hours that I do in the mornings is this idea of all of us learning together. And the reality is that what we're finding is that it's really actually pretty inefficient to talk one-on-one because it's something that someone just asked me to do a talk and I said, I can do a talk, but it has to be for 150 people. Like, I don't want to talk. I don't want to have conversations with less than like 10 people or 15 people because it's just like it's a lot of time to spend on, you know, the thing is that what I'm finding is that when you get to critical mass, you come up with the answers faster. You come up with the questions that everybody learns from when you have a big group. And so it actually is, it's actually a faster way to learn is to not have it when you're limited to what that one person's asking. But a lot of times them sitting back and watching what someone else is asking will tell them more about what they're doing. Now, you still want it to be around a certain subject, but you want it to be you know, you want to be able to have this big group of people that are able to, you know, think about it. So I think that whiteboard, you know, Apple has other services. You know, in developer relations, there you can call somebody and set up a meeting, and you can have a discussion with an Apple, developer support where they'll sit there and talk to you about your problem the same way those whiteboards work. over the phone, you know, or over FaceTime or whatever. And so you can. That is available all the time. I don't know if a lot of developers know that, but that whiteboard experience, not exactly the whiteboard experience, but having that discussion through the code and walking through those things is always out there, you know, available for people. But I think that the hardest part, I think, for Apple is figuring out how do you put engineers on video where they, as Renee talked about, they might say the wrong thing. So that's the most difficult part because what we're finding is if you give people challenges like, hey, we're all going to do something together, or if they come and say, just bring their questions, you know, like, again, the office hours that I do every morning, we don't have a format. People come in and they just start asking questions about media, and it can be about film, it can be about live, it can be about audio, and there's, you know, a thoughtful discussion about that, and everybody learns, and because a lot of people don't even know what to ask. They don't know what they don't know yet, you know, and so those things start to, you know, that conversation starts to kind of solidify that process. And so I do think that the future, there's some part of the future is this kind of interactive process where you have hundreds or even thousands. I think that the system that I'm using right now would probably start to become not as useful at about 500 to 1,000. Somewhere in that range, it starts to not scale as well. But if you're thinking about individual things like, hey, today we're talking about maps. Are we really going to get 1,000 people to show up for maps? I don't know. You know, so, you know, or QuickTime or whatever, or HLS streaming, you know, and I think that there is a way to do that. But I think Apple should be doing that every day. You know, I think
instead
they
of
have,
once
they
a
have,
year, just kind of always.
I think. I think every day you have a different team, and that team only does it once a
month.
That's
a great idea.
You know, the QuickTime team shows up once a month.
Wouldn't you
love
to do that? That would be so much fun.
Yeah. And then they would, and then basically they come in and they can come in over, you know, virtually or whatever. And, you know, and I think most companies should be thinking about something like this, especially now that we don't have the conferences. But Apple could have the 20 groups that they want to highlight on, and maybe a couple specials here and there. They're all going to come on for an hour or two every month, and you can queue up questions and vote questions up as a group and figure out what you're going to ask. And then they just go through them. They've got a whiteboard and they can do a screen, you know, they can show you their code and they can go through those different questions and have a conversation with that audience. And now I think overall that along with releasing these videos all the time would be a lot more effective than WWDC. giving people ongoing support. And I think that, again,
do they not do anything like that? I mean, a lot of open source projects have a Discord or an IRC channel.
They have
always
mailing
running.
Lists. Apple's a huge mailing list company.
Mailing lists. Okay. Yeah, it's not the same, though. The interactivity, I agree with you, Alex, is really great.
And I think that there's something about it that we're finding that is we're finding that there's something about the discussion process that we're getting, you know, with what we're doing in office hours that is this interactive conversation. You get a bunch of smart people, you know, that are able to talk. It's not like, for instance, it's not just one or two people.
You build on one another.
Yeah, and everyone's building, and someone else is an expert in that area, and they're able to jump in and have that conversation. Right. And the thing is that, you know, we keep on thinking about, oh, we can't do the conference anymore. Well, the other thing is when you get rid of those conferences that have been here for years, I mean, that needed to be here for a long time before we had Zoom and other tools like it. We're no longer now constrained by time and space. You know, we don't have to have it all happen in a really short period of time, and we don't have to have it all in one little place. You know, and because of that, we don't have to have multiple tracks. We can spread it all out. Because the thing is that everyone knows that by the end of this conference, your brain is numb. The stuff that you see on Thursday and Friday, you barely remember because you've absorbed some more information than you can absorb as a user oftentimes. And so, or you don't go to very many of them. And so the thing is if you stretched all those talks out all summer and just put one out at a time and had a real actual interactive conversation rather than a presentation, the developers would get a lot more out of it. And if they had this constant, you know, input of, you know, of being able to talk to someone, you know, I think that it'd just be far more powerful than what people are getting right now. And because they can only take on, you want to have them always have a place to go to get that information. But it's actually more, I know this will sound crazy, but it's more efficient to have more people. You know, the student-teacher ratio is actually, you know, it's important to have a big number, not a small number.
You created really a test tube, a laboratory for this and proven it. I hope somebody's listening at some of these big tech companies, especially Apple, because I love this. I feel like we're in the Marvel comic universe. We are no longer constrained by time and space.
Yeah. But it is. It's true. I mean,
it's like the Doctor Strange.
Is it like when Superman left Krypton and his father's talking to him in the little spaceship, telling him that boundless galaxies of knowledge are now his?
The big thing is, though, is that everyone keeps on trying to figure out how to reproduce their conference. Okay, how do we do it over 4 days, or how do we do it over 7 days?
I'm like,
why are you doing that?
Yeah,
that was that made sense when we had to do it that way. But right now, we don't have to do it that way. We can
also
stretch it all out,
solve, or at least help solve the one complaint people have about not having meet space conferences is that collegial sense of running into people once a year that you haven't seen in a while.
The serendipity.
This would solve that, I think, to some degree.
Well, and the thing is that inside of like, so there's, you know, there's 1,500 people that are now signed up for this little office hours thing. There's 300 that show up every day. There's 300 that show up every day. So every morning we've got 300 people, you know, they're talking.
They're not all talking at once. Oh, they are.
No. There's about 40 that
you have presenters.
Show up with video.
Yeah,
you have to get. Well, they're not presenters. They're just the ones that they're what we call the OG. You know, the original gang. A lot of them have been around for a while, but they're the panelists, and they self organize that. I mean, there's mic checks and stuff. So if you don't have a good internet connection and good video and audio, most people just don't turn their video on because it's, you know, you have to have something to say anyway. But the point is that then you have another 200 people that are watching, you know, two to 250 people that are just watching but asking questions, and they're in chat. And then there's 400 people in a Discord that are all talking all day, you know, about this stuff. And we have people in the group that are now forming companies together. They're doing collaborations with people they've never met. And it's way deep. If you ask any of them that are going regularly, it's way deeper than any of the quote-unquote hallway conversations or the, yeah. the drinks that we have at conferences yeah. because we're seeing each other all the time.
Yeah.
You know, now, does that work in post-COVID? I don't know. But when are we going to get to post-COVID? I don't know.
I think it might well work.
Yeah, I think that...
Now, on the grid that you're using Zoom, there's 25 people on the grid at any given
time. Well, that shows 25. It's actually... It's maxed is out at 49. I think the most we've ever had is about 44, 45. What most of us see is 49. We're going to probably cut it back to 25 because 49 is too many. I can't see who's talking, you know,
Do you have to moderate it? Does somebody run it?
It's heavily. Oh, I run it.
It's
definitely a moderated conversation, you know, and what I think of it as is it's a moderated peer-to-peer learning system. You know, so it's heavily curated, you know, there's a set of rules of engagement of how people interact and how they raise their hand and how they ask questions. And, you know, it's very structured because without structure, you can't scale, you know, and so there's a lot of structure to it. I think a lot of people think that they're just going to have a conversation and it's going to get bigger, but it has to have a lot of structure, you know, and so that structure is around. You know, mostly around respect, having a useful conversation, having it be pleasurable to listen to, have it be informative. You know, those are all things that, you know, it's a clean show. You know, it's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, those types of things. And so we work on that. And then you just keep on engaging with the folks that, you know, keep showing up and provide useful information. And it's a wide range of really high end pros in different areas, from filmmaking to live to you know, the folks that are selling the gear, the folks that are using the gear, everything is kind of there. And as it gets bigger, it gets smarter. I don't mean to keep talking about it on here, but I think that when we think about DubDub and all these conferences, I think that it is what we're experimenting with keeps on. I keep on feeling like there's something here. I don't know if it's exactly this thing, but there's something here that is. Most people who are going to it regularly are saying this is the most, you know, they've learned more about media production than they've learned in years, but it's not, there's no classes, we do have second hours where we talk about something specific. So today we were talking about how to do remote music production between Pro Tools and Logic and, you know, people actually sending music back and forth in multiple states. And so that was an hour of that. Tomorrow it's about camera lookup tables. The next day it's about how media production was done in the White House in the Obama administration. And then on Friday it's about concert photography. So it changes every, you know, there's these 1 hours, but they're not classes, they're discussions. You know, there's one person that really knows that, or two or three people that really know that subject matter. And then everyone starts, we call it the pit, you know, and everyone starts to ask them questions.
I think there's a lot of applications for this besides conferences. This might be the future of education, frankly.
It's an interesting experiment, you know, yeah. But I think that when we think about conferences, I think that we need to think about ways to stretch those conversations out. To get back to our current discussion, is that how do we stretch these conversations out into a longer, not in a 3-day course, but a 3-month course or 6 months or just year round. I mean, what if we stopped thinking about going to a conference and just started paying for a subscription, that $1,500 that we give to Apple for the conference, just pay that every, you know, pay that for a yearly subscription to the educational platform that they, now you get something every day that's available to you from Apple as part of that program. And I think that it would be far more effective. It would build a closer relationship between Apple. The hard part for Apple is just getting over the idea of putting engineers on video constantly. Like
Need somebody like you who has some media skills to be the presenter who could.
They have speaker training. Like all the people who are up on stage, they go through what's called speaker training. It is a huge difference in the people who've gone through all of that in the media training.
Yeah.
Well, and it's hard though. I think that I think about that a lot when we see other people doing it. Because I run a lot of other people's shows, and I realize that when you have the four of us have done a lot of this stuff, and I look at whether you know, the hosting process, you know, what you do, Leo, what I do to a lesser degree, is there is so much going on for the host of throwing the, you know, keeping the conversation moving, keeping it exciting, cutting people off when they're saying too much, not, you know, pulling things out of them when they're not saying enough, you know, finding the right time to ask a question, you know, all these things are super complex and it takes a couple thousand tries.
Yeah. You know, so it's, or 10,000. You know, like yeah. But notice I don't do it with 45 people.
It's really enjoyable. You should come join us sometime.
I gotta get up in the morning. Just in smaller batches, Leo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You do in smaller batches. You get 45 by the end of the week.
I'd be very interested. I think that this, you know, someday, maybe when I retire, we could start doing something like this. I if you don't mind if I steal your idea, I love this. This is such a clever idea. If you go to youtube.com/AlexLindsay, Say, and click any one of these. This is today's. By the way, this is a nice feature you've added. You've got notes now, so you can jump to.
Oh, sorry. Do you know what I found out? If you put 0:00 at the top, YouTube will automatically add chapter markers to the video for you.
Did
like
you
like a podcast chapter markers?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was a beta feature for the last month, and it went wide this month.
Say it again, so I understand it.
If you put 0:00 as the first time index, then for people who have the feature enabled, it'll actually create a jump list at the bottom of the video on the web page and in the mobile app. Then you can just tap to go to whatever section you want.
So I, as the person watching it, do that?
No, Alex would put it in the description as a streamer. But then and then it enables that interface element for
so
you.
So what you're telling it is, jump list. Yeah, we've got 0:00 now. Add more. And how does it know when to mark it?
When it sees that list, it sees the list starting with 0:00. Yeah, then it pulls it up in the time code.
This is Jeffrey Powers, who does a lot of YouTube work, and he saw it. He couldn't stand the fact that I was just streaming it, so he was just like, "Let me take that over."
He's doing it manually.
He does. So, I think he does it during the show. So that thing is he does it while he's listening.
It's still
so
manual.
That thing pops up right out.
Somebody has to push a button, or you just enter it in the comments.
You know, it's still manual. Like you have to tell it. Yeah, you have to tell it where the jumps you want are, and then it'll create the interface for you once you make the proper list.
Yeah, here's the YouTube help article, which I thank the chat room for finding. Video chapters to help you more easily navigate videos.
Yeah,
and it tells you exactly how to turn that on. So somebody is writing this still has to write this stuff down.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been using it for reviews because some people care more about one, especially when the videos get longer. Some people care more about one section than another. Yeah.
Well, you always, Alex, you always have to have a secretary for any meeting, and I'm glad you now have a designated secretary to take notes.
He's a lot more than a secretary, but he's good at coaching me on because I'm like, YouTube, I'll put it up there. We'll see how it goes. But it's a good place to see if you like what you're seeing, whether that would even be remotely. But I would say the YouTube experience is there's something about being in it where everyone's talking in the chat and there's questions and it's just like it's, you know, you put it up on YouTube and people tell me that they listen to it and they like listening to it there. But I always feel like it's like 10% of the experience, you know, of what it's like to be in the room. So it's an amazing experience.
Someday
I just think that
I'll get up.
I just get to hang out with the coolest bunch of people
every
9 morning.
9 a.m. So. And I will I'll get to see it. The group assembles, starts assembling at 6 a.m. The presentations begin at 7, and then there's the third hour.
We basically do Q&A.
That's all Pacific time.
7 to 8 is Q&A. So it's just any questions that come up, we just answer them. And then 8 to 9 is some kind of thing. And again, I think that pertinent to this conversation is just that I think that there's something about it that I hope folks are taking, you know, folks that are thinking about conferences look at as a possibility of constant conversation.
Yes. Oh, I'd love it if Apple just started doing this. They've got the resources to do it.
And they have the mechanisms now with things like the Today at Apple at Home. You know, they're starting to learn how to have people produce and post video on Apple.com.
I've always thought this whole COVID thing would be benefits as well as detriments to it. And obviously, we know about the detriments and the companies going out of business and the 25% unemployment in the United States and all that, but we're also learning some new skills, and thank goodness we had the technologies to take advantage of those. So,
well, and I think that there's such a huge opportunity. The reason I'm pushing so hard is that there's such a huge opportunity for us to include the rest of the world. When we, these physical events cut out so many people, they cut out the opportunity right. for people to be part of these conversations. So my interest in it, you know, is how do we create this global conversation, you know, and how do we, you know, and I will admit that I really want to sever the head of physical events. Because I think that they undermine the ability for, I do a lot of work in Africa and I see a lot of people who can never come to these because of immigration, because of visas, because of everything else. And I know that if these go online, it means that they get an opportunity to have those. And people who don't have the same amount of money, people don't have, you know, that have the same ability to get to these conferences. There's, you know, and so they get this horrible little live stream or a little set of videos that are really boring to watch because they weren't able to come. And if we can kill this off, it creates an enormous, and we figure out how to do it well online instead, we create a huge opportunity for a lot of other people to be part of the conversation. And that's my interest in it. You know, my interest is to make it more available to more people. And the way to do that is to get rid of these physical events.
So in 13.5, Apple released the API. Google's done the same on yeah. Android for the exposure notification. And Zach Hall on 9to5 Mac has been keeping track of which states plan to use it. Very few. I think it's 4 out of 50.
And Italy.
and yeah, France said no. Germany said okay. Latvia says it's going to do it. And the first one is launched. This is Italy's Immuni or Immuni. Now, it's in English, so I don't – maybe it could be
– Immuni.
Immuni. Hey, are you Immuni? No. So protect yourself, help slow down the epidemic. You turn it on. It has other information in it, and it emphasizes your privacy is safe. Immuni. Immuni does not collect your name, date of birth, address, telephone number, email address, or spaghetti sauce preference. It cannot – I'm sorry. That was really rude. But I'm an Italian-American, so it's okay. no, it's not okay. So that's interesting. I want – you know, one of the – and we talked about this pretty extensively on Twitter on Sunday. Bruce Schneier, the Brookings Institute, a lot of people are starting to come forward saying no app will ever be particularly useful, especially one that respects privacy.
They're useful in preventing other people from stealing our information using the cover of COVID-19.
Yes.
If all they want to say is COVID-19 gives us an excuse to steal your information, Google and Apple are providing a service by saying, okay, this is all you get.
Yeah. But health officials say that's not enough to do real contact tracing. We still have to hire tens of thousands of humans, and we do have to invade your privacy because that's what contact tracing is. And actually, Apple's app could be useful if they didn't mind giving up location information, but Apple's very, you know, very clear that that's not going to happen. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe Immuni will be a great boon in Italy. Just don't know. Switzerland's doing a non-public trial. The issue with the Swiss app, Beatmaster's a Swiss citizen in our chat room, he tells me, is that they don't have any privacy framework or any framework at all for the use of any of this stuff. So they have the Swiss federal government has to approve or make some rules, yeah. has to do some rules, but they're testing it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, there's a bipartisan piece of legislation that's making its way through Congress right now to censure Google and Apple, but simply to say basically to lay down rules of privacy for any COVID-19 tracking or health tracking app, which would be a hell of a thing because it would be the first time that any law really made any promises or made any warranties about privacy on a federal level.
Yeah.
They're breaking encryption at the same time, so it's always one.
Obviously governments will invade your privacy the minute they can. They obviously would love to have, especially now with protests going on, contact tracing and things like that for protesters as opposed to COVID. But it is also the case that an app that doesn't help human contact tracers do their job isn't going to be particularly useful.
Isn't the old joke that they want the government just small enough to fit inside your bedroom?
Yeah. It's not a joke. That's no joke.
the real argument seems to be about not just having humans involved in the tracking and tracing process, but basically getting as much data as possible to analyze and to build new models from. And unfortunately, the most useful apps will provide the greatest amount of information about where people went, how much time they spent in a location, what kind of a location was it, what kind of people were they hanging with, all this other sort of stuff. And unfortunately, that's the sort of fine-grained data that is absolutely a no-go for privacy.
Yeah. There's also
they've proven that, right? Like, if they hadn't violated our privacy, maybe we'd be more trusting of them, but it comes on the heels of demonstrable violations of privacy over the last few years.
Exactly.
When I saw it coming out, I was like, no one's going to put this on their phone.
No. even if it's private. Useful because it doesn't give health. I mean, if you're a contract tracer, what you'd love is if I could give you my phone and you could see all the places I've been and all the people I've run into. So
they'll just make Pokemon Trace, Leo. That'll solve that problem. Everyone will download it and we'll be playing Pikachu while giving up all our data.
It's one of the reasons, honestly, I feel like we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place in the U.S. because we're individualists. The countries that have conquered this are much more collectivist societies, and people are willing to do stuff because it's for the good of all. Here in the United States, we're basically cowboys. We're out there and saying, nope, not on my watch. So I guess COVID's here to stay. I shouldn't be so pessimistic about it, but I just... What about this issue with iOS Mail having a critical security flaw? It says iOS and iPadOS users should install Apple's latest security updates immediately. Germany's Federal Cybersecurity Agency has issued a warning. The vulnerabilities were actually discovered first in the U.S. by ZecOps, which is a security firm. And it's a zero day. They were being actively exploited. In fact, they have been since January of 2018. Apple says we found no evidence they're used against customers.
Yeah. It's this weird thing in computers that, I mean, like over the same week we saw an iMessage or a text string that would destroy your iPhone. There was an image that people try to trick you into putting on your Samsung phone that would destroy your Samsung phone. And there's parsing is the enemy of security, whether it's Unicode parsing or emoji parsing or image parsing or anything that requires data to be fed through a parser. It seems like some bad actor can malform that data in a way that causes nothing
but destruction. Steve Gibson's always said interpreters are the biggest flaw.
Yes.
Yeah. Even fonts can be used to maliciously. Yep. Yeah. So ZecOps says they believe with high confidence that the flaws have been exploited in the wild. There's zero-click flaws, which are as bad as you can get. You don't have to actually, as a user, do anything to be hacked. But that's one reason.
This is the same thing that happened a month ago, right? There was like, this is the mail flop. I was like, nobody's using it. They're like, yes, people are using it. Right. Now it's the same story.
One more reason to do 13.15.1? I can't even.
13.5.5, I think.
I've lost track.
So many numbers.
I hope you got your MacBook Pro because Apple just doubled the price of RAM on the entry.
So that's actually not the case.
Oh, it's
so
not. Okay.
I found out about this. Yeah. So when it initially, Apple, if you look across the website, across the pricing, it's always a $200 increase for RAM. When it first came out, it was discounted. Some people are saying accidentally.
It was $100.
I find it hard to believe that. Like, it's possible that with COVID and all this stuff going on, someone who had to race to the office to do something did something wrong. I have a hard time believing that. But in either way, it was incorrectly or it was purposefully discounted at first, and it has now gone back to the normal price, the same price that you would pay for the exact same upgrade on the MacBook Air. So if you bought early, you got a deal. Basically.
Yeah, that's what The Verge says, is that Apple told them it's a price correction. It's not an increase.
I heard the same thing earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, now I'm kicking myself. I was thinking about it, and then I thought, well, I like my MacBook Air. I don't need it. But I ain't using no 8 gig RAM machine of any kind.
And some people wonder, like, they're always like, why is the RAM so expensive? And the thing is, it's just an easily digestible marketing ploy. Like if you go to almost any store, there's the bad microwave, the decent microwave, and the premium microwave. And some companies have the crappily built laptop and the decently built laptop and the super awesome built laptop. And Apple has just always found it to be understandable to humans, and we're willing to put up with it, that they'll make all the MacBooks built with the same quality, but you'll pay like $200 for every RAM increment. Well, and it's just, it's the lunacy of marketing.
Well, we used to have an issue where, I mean, because with many, many products, the feature set and the quality of the feature set are two very different things. And so just because they say they're all the same doesn't mean that they are actually the same. And when they're a huge price difference, it doesn't mean that someone's overcharging you. It might mean they did something else. And one of the things that we learned in the 90s was that our Macs would be much more. If we went through a lot of trouble to check the RAM, Electric Image back then made a RAM checker that you'd leave on all weekend, and it would literally go through every register one at a time and just keep on working through it. And if it saw anything, we'd replace it with another piece of RAM. And we found that it was the number one predictor of how stable our system was going to be was how good our RAM was, and how, you know, we could do things that you just didn't think were possible with the computer. But like we had 7 million objects in, or I think it was 750,000 objects in Avid. But that comes from everything being tuned, including all of that RAM. And I don't remember how much RAM got sent back to make that work, but it was a lot. We went through a lot of RAM that was considered completely acceptable RAM, high quality RAM, that if you really went through it, there were some registries that weren't totally flat. And so the RAM is a huge deal. And so buying cheaper RAM, you know, is not going to necessarily get you a more stable machine. It's definitely worth paying for. It's the thing that is going to keep your machine running. You know, getting rid of spinning drives and having high quality drives and high quality RAM, that's what it's constantly going in and out of your computer as it works. And if it's not at the highest quality, you may have unpredictable results.
Well, and of course, Apple RAM is not upgradable. You get what you get, and that's it. So
on the laptops,
Yeah. So if you're getting it, get as much as you're going to need.
No one ever feels like, darn it, I got too much RAM.
I have a 64 gig RAM iMac Pro. I probably didn't need to buy all that.
You'll find
you're just not working. You're just not playing hard. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Yep.
You can keep the entire season of The West Wing in RAM disk.
I actually forgot that. I think you talked me into it, Renee, because I got the 10-core iMac Pro.
Yeah.
And I forgot that I opted for all of that RAM. And the other day I was looking at the specs and I went, what?
Well, if Alex sent you some more computational photography images, you could make use of that.
Oh, man.
Photogrammetry.
Hey, Leo, if you don't feel like it's working hard enough, just get me a login and I'll just start sending stuff in your computer. You'll just look over and your computer is like white hot. You know, like it's like glowing.
It's like SETI at home, but with Alex smiling at you.
I have that the menu, iStat menu bar, which shows all the cores working. And, you know, basically they're going, you got anything else? Is that all you got?
Did you see the file? I can send you the files I sent to Justine.
I just
lit that thing up.
I don't really have a lot of photogrammetry applications in my life.
Yet.
That's just because you don't know how to do it well enough. Leo, you would love it we'll have to have a session.
Honestly, if I had got 32 gigs, I wouldn't have noticed the difference. In fact, probably wouldn't have noticed the difference if I had got 16 gigs. I'm thinking.
Well, that's until this channel goes 8K, Leo, and then you'll be wishing for more.
I a little bit overbought on that. Let's put it this way. If I'm sitting here using my MacBook Air and I then go to my iMac Pro and I don't notice a difference at all, I think I overbought.
I think it's
Apple got really good back when they were stuck on the low power DDR3 RAM of doing everything they could, like memory compression and SSD, really fast SSD swap to make all that RAM feel as big as they possibly could. And the side effect of that now is that people are like, I don't really need RAM, turns out.
So what color are you going to get? You're going to get lava pink. You're going
to get... Ooh, baby.
Ooh, baby. The Power Beats Pro. This is the big... hardware upgrade.
The Power Ranger colors.
Wow. You get your spring yellow. your raspberry red, your that's Fruit Loops. Your spring yellow, your cloud pink.
Green clovers.
I'm sorry, that's the way
blue diamonds.
Blue diamonds.
That's Lucky Charms.
That's Lucky Charms. I'm sorry. Lava red and glacier blue. They're pretty.
They're in addition to the other colors. They're not instead of, so right. You can still get the black and the white in the.
Do you use your Powerbeats Pros?
I use them only because my ears are so mangled from years of grappling. Like I'm wearing an AirPods Pro in this ear, and it will stay in mostly, but the regular ones don't. My left ear is better than my right ear, but the Powerbeats Pro go around my ear. So if I'm doing anything active at all, I need like that full ear cuppage to.
I should get some of these for Lisa. I gave her my AirPods Pro. I think, and then I had a bunch of other like a Jabra and I think I fried everything that had a USB micro USB. I must have a bad cable or adapter somewhere.
Oh no!
Because all of a sudden, it must be possible.
For sure.
Yeah, I think I fried a bunch of stuff. All of a sudden, nothing will charge. So now I have to figure out where it was I'm plugging it in. So maybe it's time to get something. The advantage
people will buy like $1,000 headphones, plug them into dollar store cables, wonder what happens.
The advantage
you gotta be careful
of Type C and Lightning is, they're not using micro USB. That's the advantage.
But remember there was that Google engineer who had to rate every single one of them on Amazon until they got their act together and started making safe USB-C cables.
Yeah, that's right. So maybe I should get, these are the expensive though, these Powerbeat Pros, right?
$249 US.
Okay, same as AirPod Pros. Do they have the noise canceling or no?
No, they have isolation, not canceling, so there's no active process on them. They just stick in your ears.
Yeah.
just a quick comment. Cables are. I've decided the cables are like socks. That at some point you should just throw out all of your regular socks and just replace them with new wonderful ones. It's not that expensive to simply say how many USB-C, how many Lightning cables do I actually use, and then say okay, I'm going to throw out every single one of them, or at least I'm going to put them in a Ziploc baggie and put them someplace that's kind of hard to find in case I really really am desperate for a cable, and I'm going to replace them all with really really good cables and just solve that problem immediately and permanently.
Yeah, we're seeing just so many problems where things are just not. It's not that they're not completely working. I mean, it's not like they just plug them in and it doesn't show up. It's that we're seeing all kinds of instabilities, like just odd instabilities related to cables. That it's just a very wide range. I'm following Andy's advice, and I've been slowly getting rid of ones that I don't know where they came from, or they're not beefy enough, and everything else, because it's just there's something about USB-C that is far more sensitive. It's probably a lot more data, so it's USB-C and Thunderbolt seem to be a lot more sensitive now than they were before, then make sure that they're clearly marked which one they are, because they're not the same. Not that I'm bitter.
Absolutely.
Let's make the same plug and then make all the cables different.
It really is like going through a memory lane too. Like you can actually, it's almost like going through a scrapbook saying, oh, that's the one I bought at the CVS pharmacy in Central Square in Cambridge because I forgot the charger and there was a Starbucks nearby. Oh, that's the one I bought in Chicago because I thought I'd brought a Lightning cable, but actually I brought a USB-C cable and so I couldn't charge my old iPad. And they're good for nostalgia, but that's about it.
I had a friend who bought an iPad Pro a couple of weeks ago, and he tried to plug it into an LG display and it didn't work. And he texted me and I go, oh yeah, because the LG display wants Thunderbolt, not USB-C. He's like, but it plugs in. It's the same cable. Like, no, I know, I'm sorry.
So
it really isn't.
So
and then there's the ones with PD power delivery and not with power. I mean, yeah, the whole thing is trying to be civilized and human. They became totally uncivil and inhuman. It's remarkable.
Gal Gadot. I think the world, one of the things we've always needed in this world is a Hedy Lamarr biopic. And it will
starring
be
Wonder Woman?
Starring Wonder Woman. Man, Apple has ordered Hedy Lamarr starring and executive produced by Gal Gadot.
Do you think this is intentional? Like they've got Captain America, they've got the Hulk, they've got like they're
all working
every
for
single
Apple.
Marvel and DC hero on Apple TV. That can't
they
be
don't have any Marvel content, but they have all the stars.
Yeah,
that is interesting. No word in the Apple press release on how much they paid for this, but Apple has been writing some hefty checks
Well, they took, I guess they Martin Scorsese couldn't sell his next film, and then Apple was like, yeah, we'll give you $180 million.
$180 million for Killers of the Flower Moon. Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, Martin Scorsese helming, as they say in Hollywood. It's boffo.
And here's why this should really worry theater owners and theater distribution and that whole process is that fundamentally, it just didn't add up to do to a theater, but it did add up for online distribution. And that should, you know, it's a bigger game now. Like the big films are going to, I think over the next 2 to 3 years, you're going to see the biggest films with the biggest budgets are going to start moving towards a company like Apple or Disney or someone else paying for it for their online because they're competing with everybody else. And the money, it doesn't, the ticket sales don't matter to them. They're trying to, you know, pull in subscribers over long periods of time. And so the math is just a very different math that's going to allow filmmakers to have more freedom and more budget, you know, to do that, to do those things. And I think this is just the beginning of that. The Irishman was the same thing.
Yeah, he got a huge budget for The Irishman. Yep. And spent even more.
Right.
I didn't know, though, that Scorsese has a long relationship with Apple. He was in an iPhone ad. But he also apparently directed a scene in his movie The Departed using iChat.
There's actually footage in The Wolf of Wall Street that was shot on an iPhone.
What, really?
One of the shots on the special effects shot list was we need a shot of like on an airplane above the seat, you know, the fasten seatbelt sign on, and so the special effects guy was just on a plane and just held up his iPhone and then like you just recorded what was there, and then like at a meeting, so okay, well here's the sort of thing that we're going to be going for because so, I shot well, when we actually do the real thing it. And then Scorsese said, well, why don't we just use the real iPhone shot, we're good, like okay.
And apparently that's happened in quite a few really famous movies where they've taken like the sample shot on the iPhone and it's ended up in some really, really famous movies.
Okay, we're going to Office Hours now with Alex Lindsay. So what would the challenges be? I mean, it's high quality. It's 4K. Color matching would be tricky, but there's software to feel. Do that.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the
using iPhone footage in a major motion picture.
Oh, that stuff, mixing and matching content is happens all the time. Yeah. I mean, low light is harder, you know, is going to be harder because it's going to fall apart faster.
An airplane placard is a very simple thing. You don't have to worry about depth of field or light or anything, right?
Yeah, I think that for small shots like that, we've seen lots of, you know, iPhones being used for different things like that, where it's an insert shot or something quick. Because that shot, I don't remember how long it was, but I bet you it was...
Yeah.
Measured in frames. People, you know,
people use stock footage in movies all the time. I'm watching the credits and I'm seeing, you know, thanks to Shutterstock, iStock Photo. And I mean, it's like, I guess you didn't shoot that whole movie. Yeah.
Well, there's things that you can do, like establishing shots. I mean, I've done ones where we took an image off of iStock. We then projected it, did what we call camera projection mapping, and just projected it over simple objects. And then just do a little camera push, you know, and move the little cars. And because it's only going to be there for a second. It's like, and it's like, this is this location. And it's, you know,
nothing is real.
It's movie magic.
It's $40,000 cheaper than it was going to be otherwise. And so especially at the last minute in a show and where that really is popular, it's less in big feature films and more in smaller feature films and television shows. Back in television shows when we only had a couple $1 million an episode, you know, but being able to say the director saying what we really need right here is an establishing shot, or we really need this little whatever. And being able to throw a real quick piece in that's using stock photography or something from a cell phone. I mean, again, it's really hard to compete with the iPhone because there's just so many engineers. There's so much money because one of the number one reasons people upgrade is for the phone. And so as a result, Samsung and Apple primarily, I mean, those are the two big ones, play so hard in the camera area that these cameras are getting to be amazing. You know, like they're just amazing, pieces of machinery. And so I think that we're just going to see more and more of that. I mean, I think that shooting the whole film on it, I know Soderbergh has done that.
Yeah, it's a
gimmicky. You're like, because the thing is there's no, there still depth of field starts to become an issue. Now, the question will be is, like, what I haven't tried to do is, like, well, at some point, the LiDAR and everything else is going to make the depth of field a lot more accurate. So, and instant. So you have the ability to possibly, you know, recreate a lot of that as well. And so that's going to help kind of figured that out, because imagine, again, what you're getting to with LiDAR and the photography on the iPad and hopefully someday on the iPhone is the ability that you're shooting a raw plate that you can add depth of field and you can add 3D elements and you can add all kinds of the composites can all be done, you know, later in post. You know, you have all that data there to do it well. And so we're seeing a little bit of that with portrait, you know, photography, but with LiDAR, and as that continues to grow, it could really get to a point where you could do a lot later. And so you have a raw plate that's all in focus that you can keep on deciding what is and what isn't. And so does that replace what we're doing for a Martin Scorsese film? Probably not. A small shot here and there, that probably makes sense. But for, you know, the stuff we're seeing on YouTube and even smaller budget stuff, I think it could be really interesting.
Well, what's interesting to me is they had on the screencast is a wonderful podcast. It's John August and aforementioned Craig Mazin. And they had on the person, I'm blanking on his name, the person who was directing the Ryan Reynolds Rock movie for Netflix. And they had to stop production, obviously. And they were talking about what that does to budgets, because when you come back, you only have a skeleton crew. And that, so it's going to take an additional 10 days or an additional 20 days or an additional month. And that has to be budgeted. And a lot of the smaller movies, I mean, The Rock will get the budget, but a lot of smaller places won't. So the ability to save whatever money they can then becomes not just nice for them, but urgent for them.
Right.
Mm. What I thought was interesting is that, you know, famously, Netflix got The Irishman, Scorsese's last. And they, again, so, and it doesn't look like Netflix worked very hard to try to get this movie. So that might indicate that The Irishman was more of a, it gave them attention and prestige, status, but didn't translate into making their money back.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, it's, if that's got to be like the easiest check to write. Like if you want to get prestige, Scorsese or Spielberg, you're good.
Whatever you want.
you should write that check if that is your goal. Yeah. Although given that I just have to say that I was reading the Hollywood Reporter had a piece about it and was saying that Apple is not just like writing the check, like buying the movie. They're like being they're designating themselves as the creative studio supporting the project. And I'm like, oh, those boys and girls are going to have such a fun time telling Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio that we have some notes on this scene. Like that's going to be fun. I want to see the behind the scenes documentary on that.
I don't think they've done it though. Isn't there a thing where they're saying they're deliberately not doing notes or letting all the studio people do that? Although I do wonder if they'd be like, oh no, De Niro can't use an iPhone or Leo can't use an iPhone.
Yeah. At least on earlier TV productions, weren't there some stories about lots of interference about sexual content and nudity?
They were apparently not true. And based on shows like C and like The Morning Show,
sure. I have to admit, I was excited that we got Jason Momoa. You don't hire him
unless you want all the nudity that you can possibly get on that screen.
And violence. Decapitated people in the first 3 seconds.
I have to admit that as a parent, I was excited that Apple TV Plus is going to be something that is PG-13 at most and I can watch it. And then when it first came out, I was like, there's nothing here I can show my kids.
Turns out that's Disney Plus. Like you have all these people complaining that they can't, like they got a show greenlit for Disney Plus and Disney's like, no, that's a little bit too mature. You're going to Hulu now. And so all these shows are having, even like Lizzie McGuire is being forced onto Hulu because they won't let her be a 30-year-old Lizzie McGuire on Disney Plus.
Oh, that's interesting. Right. Little public Studios service announcement. If you're going to loot an Apple store, you might think twice. Apparently, none of that stuff is going to be usable. Here's a screenshot. It says, please return to Apple Walnut Street. This device has been disabled and is being tracked. Local authorities will be alerted. Apple's actually closing its stores and boarding them up because of looting.
Maybe don't loot. I'm going to throw that out there.
Maybe just don't steal.
Maybe don't loot.
Doesn't reflect well on your cause. It gives bad people, an excuse to do bad things.
Or if you're an influencer and you're getting someone taking a photo of you looking like you're looting, find a better life.
Did you see? It was everywhere.
I saw a bunch of them.
Yeah. Amazing. Influencers. That's something we could get rid of without a whole lot of complaint. Unbelievable.
Lawyers
are finally few. The pressure's off.
Yeah. We can definitely get them seats on the Google Frenchum B arc for sure.
Up there with the phone sterilizers.
Yes.
Yeah. and the what were the other group that was in there?
Market analysts, telephone sanitizers. It's been a while since I've read that
so
one.
So many of those groups, and I still want it done.
Did you see the? This is after the Santa Monica looting. Let me see if I can find this. This was widely circulated. This Santa Monica woman who pretended to drill. She's helping. I'm helping while her.
And there was another woman who got her boyfriend to shoot a Belfie while she was staring at a broken T-Mobile store.
And then they hop in their Mercedes and they drive off.
And then Jake Paul was just loitering around one of the establishments. So they just stop. Yeah,
just happened to just be loitering around. Just, you know. Oh my God.
Do boyfriends something good. Of Instagram. Just do something good. Be like Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. Just be nice. Be nice. I understand. People are angry. They're right to be angry.
But it's not your content. Yes. This should not be your content.
Not your content. Oliver Haslam says you can own a former Apple Mike Markle's CEO mansion for a mere $37.5 million.
Oliver would just use that to deep fry everything.
Can you do you get to keep the horse collar hanging on the wall there in the kitchen? Because that's weird.
I've heard of staging a property for the listing, but I'm not sure what they're marketing towards there. That's I don't understand that business.
Yeah, yeah. It looks pretty. It's in a pretty part of the world. It's a 5,400 square foot mansion, but for some reason, with 5,400 square feet, it only has one bedroom, three bathrooms. So there's, I guess
it's really one person. It's for one person.
It's one person. That's it. And that's what
a lot of space.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't get that at all. Yeah. I mean, I'm not,
it's not even his main house. He bought it for $9 million. This is not worth $37.5 million. I'm sorry. I don't care. The whole kitchen, it has to go. It's just got to go. Let's take a break. We're going to come back and your picks, gentlemen, in just a bit. I already have something. Lisa got me something very special. Uh-oh. I know. She's so thoughtful. It's it's my Manscaped kit. Oh, it finally came. Lisa's giving me a little hint here. You know, if you're quarantined, with or without somebody, but if you're quarantined, it's not a bad idea to keep your grooming going, right? But sometimes, gentlemen, you're doing some extra grooming, and it can get risky. You ever experience an unfortunate occurrence below the waist? That's no fun. That's why you want the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0. This sounds like I'm making this up, doesn't it? It is the it is the greatest trimmer. Actually, I've used it on all sorts of body parts because it is the greatest trimmer ever made. First of all, ceramic blade, cutting edge, but will not cut you. And it is 7,000 RPMs. That does two things. First, it makes it much smoother, much more reliable, much less likely to pull, chafe, or cut. But it also is, I'm running it right now. It's very quiet.
For those of you who are listening and not having video, he is simply putting it against his chin. This is you're not. I just wanted to head off any visuals that
use your notice the LED light.
Sometimes the theater of the air is not the best venue for.
And this, by the way, I should point out, this is not my personal lawnmower. That's at home. This is one that, as far as I know, has never been used. This is sitting at home. It has a really nice USB charger, so it's always ready. It goes right in there. And you notice when I turn it on, that bright LED light, because you don't want to be spelunking without a little bit of a headlamp, if you know what I mean. You want to see what you're doing. Manscaping accidents are nothing to sneeze at or scream at. This is an amazing thing. Actually, what I have in front of me is the Perfect Package 3.0 and Peak Hygiene Plan. Perfect Father's Day gift. Dad will laugh. Dad will enjoy it. It comes, by the way, this always, Micah had to explain what this is. It comes with a newspaper. And there's some good content in here. And I thought, it's just some nice reading. For instance, as you're manscaping, you might want to, there's a whole section here on different styles you might want to adopt. in your manscaping. But Mike explained it, and I guess I should probably have read the manual. This is for spreading out and standing on so that afterwards you can wrap it up and all the hair is easily disposed of. See, me didn't know that's what the newspaper was for. I just went out on the back deck. Gave the birds a show. You also get this lovely shaving kit. And you get a few of the lovely manscaping balms. Because, after all, a balm isn't a terrible thing to waste. This is the crop preserver. I'll just let you imagine what it's for. And the crop reviver. They smell wonderful. Very masculine. Very nice. Manscaping also has manscaped. If you want to prove that you have been manscaped, they have the manscaped boxer shorts, which are clearly branded. I actually love Manscaped. I think this is your great product. I believe in grooming, and I think that your friend, your close personal friend, your significant other, will also believe in grooming and will appreciate the effort you have made. They will also appreciate the quiet sounds of the 7,000 RPM quiet stroke technology. Do they really? They call it the quiet stroke? Okay. It is quiet and it's smooth and it is lovely. And you can show off your mower loud and proud right on that charging dock / stand. Oh, one other thing I really like about a Manscaped. You could subscribe and get a new replacement blade, brand new ceramic blades every 3 months right to your door, so your trimmer always stays fresh, clean, and most importantly, sharp. If you're looking for a great gift without leaving the house, the Perfect Package 3.0 and peak hygiene plan for the ungroomed in your life. It'd be a great present for groomsmen if you've got a wedding coming up. Hey, groomsmen, maybe you would like to do some grooming. It's Father's Day, birthdays, graduation. Go to Manscaped, M-A-N-S-C-A-P-E-D, Manscaped, pasttense.com. And the offer code is MacBreak. Actually, you get a great deal, 20% off and free shipping. Manscaped.com. There's something there for everybody. It's a wonderful site, a lot of fun. And they have a good sense of humor about the whole thing. Manscaped, and it's, you know, honestly, something everybody should do. Manscaped.com, offer code MacBreak. As Micah Sargent taught me, it's always a good idea to cut back the shrubs. It makes the house look bigger, as everyone knows. Manscaped.com, offer code MacBreak. We thank him so much for giving us a little fun and supporting MacBreak Weekly. Andy, let's start with you, because I think you have something I might be interested in.
Yeah, it's basically dirt cheap Bluetooth headphones that serve a need that I have. I'm now, my sleep schedule is really, really wacky for reasons that are easy to understand. And so I don't want to bother the neighbors. So I decided, okay, it's time for me to get like Bluetooth headphones so I can watch TV and listen to music between 4, 5, and 6 in the morning. And so really what I was looking for, I just went to Amazon and I was looking for basically what is the cheapest set of headphones that ticks off a certain level, certain set of features, like USB-C for the charger. Boom. It's got that. I want super, super long battery life, so I'm not recharging it all the time. Boom. It gets about 60 hours of battery life, it says, advertised. All I know is that I'm recharging them maybe once a year, once a week, and it's perfectly good. I want controls on the ear cups so that I can do anything that I need to do, changing the volume, muting, turning things on and off. Boom. I want it to have be compatible with high-res audio. Also, another checkbox. I want them to be foldable so that if I do want to travel with them, they're not going to take up a huge amount of room. Check off of that. It also does fast charging. So if you do catch yourself unawares, you can get about 5 hours worth of charge in about 5 minutes, 5 minutes of playtime. And they do sound, and a Bluetooth 5.0 and a modern Bluetooth chipset. The reason why I had to go shopping for headphones is that my old set of over-the-ear headphones, which is for me the only kind that I can wear for more than an hour without having to just furiously like scrabble at my ear and then go into the shower and get whatever it is out of my ear. These are over the ear headphones. The previous set that I had, for some reason, they just kept disconnecting. Like every couple of minutes, just kept disconnecting. And I think it's because they were like 5 or 6 years old. I think they were like an older version of Bluetooth and an older chipset. These were like dirt cheap. They weren't the cheapest over-the-ear Bluetooth headphones on Amazon, but they were damn close. They list for $40. There's a coupon for five bucks off.
Wow.
But for that amount of money, I enjoyed this first pair so much that I bought a second pair just for the living room, so I don't have to like keep moving. I don't have to keep moving them from one room to another. I really, really like this kind of technology where it's as cheap as they could possibly get it without limiting any of the features that you really, really need to make it a successful device. And so for that reason, that's why I bought one, and then I bought another one.
Yeah, I think Anker's done a lot of really good stuff, and it's interesting because I think the profit margin on any headphone is very, very high. So instead of just taking that big markup, they're just saying, well, we could actually sell it at closer cost. Yeah.
And they sound really nice. They have a nice compromise between it does have super super mega bass, but it's actually a button. So if you don't want the super super mega bass, you can turn it off. And it also has an analog jack. So if you want them to use them as wired headphones, they'll work just fine as wired headphones. So very very happy with it. I'm glad to see that Anker had a product like this, because I've bought lots of Anker products and I've never been disappointed with them. They really do seem to know how to build a commodity product at a cost that doesn't make you regret. There are lots of really, really cheap stuff out there, and they'll work great for 3 months, and then you have to throw it out, replace it, and so therefore you've lost whatever amount of money you save by buying the $25 one instead of the $50 or $60 one. So that's why I'm like, okay, it's an Anker, good. We're done.
Yeah, they make Soundcore speakers. They make the in-ear earbuds too, that are very affordable. And I think very good. I think Soundcore is actually a good brand to know about. So thank you for that recommendation. Alex Lindsay, you got a good one. I like this. Now, IGTV, is that still around? Their version?
It is, I think. No, maybe? It's still, people are still streaming.
Okay.
So, you know, people are streaming to Instagram, and the problem with Instagram right now is that you can only stream with your phone. So you're stuck with your phone so you can't really build a switcher, or you can't do graphics, you can't have real fun. So the folks at Instagram are not about fun. They're about making it a pain in the neck. So I recommend that we all download Yellow Duck.
Yes.
What Yellow Duck does is it takes into account there's a backdoor where you can find the direct RTMP input and stream to it. And so you can actually stream directly to your Instagram Live you can stream directly into the backdoor of Instagram. Now, technically, I will tell you that this is painful. This is technically against the terms of service of Instagram, but I don't know of anybody who has ever been punished for it, other than it's not the most stable connection to Instagram, not as stable as the phone. Yeah, so it's technically breaking the rules, which is why I think that we all should do it. So because Instagram's policy on this is stupid.
This isn't even really software. It doesn't do anything. It just gives you the RTMP URL and a stream key for that.
Yeah, and then you can put it into your favorite streaming tool
and use OBS to do the actual stream.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's important that all of us should download it and consider it our our little push on Instagram that they should open that up and allow us to just do RTMP streaming. So I think it's really important for all of us to download Yellow Duck and use Yellow Duck. Use Yellow Duck as often as you can, and really just see how many streams that we can get going into Instagram Live from a phone. So I'm here today to promote the idea that we should all break the rules. So Yellow Duck is breaking the rules with Instagram, but it makes a much better show, and I think that they deserve it.
Why not? It's free, right? It's just a simple, app to give you a code.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it for a high profile event because it, again, it's against terms of service. I have seen events get cut off and or drop off for whatever reason. And they're not going to help you if it does. And it's not something that they definitely, but I don't see them closing it anytime soon because there's too many high profile people using it. So their hand is kind of stuck in the till because it's against the rules, but they can't close it without making some pretty important people pretty upset. So, so we should take advantage of that. And just thrash and push and
what if there were a way to open up the Instagram stream on your phone and then somehow get the video into your phone? Is there any way to do that?
We've built ways to do that. The other way to do it that doesn't break terms of service is to mount a phone against the monitor. So you literally mount a phone that's pointing right at the monitor.
Right.
At a very specific, you know, you have to figure out the exact distance for that phone at 1x. You don't want to make it wide or long. You just do it at 1x and you set the phone and you mount that phone. It has to be perfectly perpendicular. And then what you do is you tent it all the way around it so that the phone doesn't have any exterior light. And then when you shoot it, you won't be able to tell on Instagram that someone shot. We've done that solution for years. We started doing it with Meerkat, you know, Meerkat and Periscope had the same restrictions.
Yeah.
And so we got really good at it. And so for clients, because clients would be like, we have to, you know, our CEO, he loves to do stuff on, you know, if you're going to do something like that, we have to do, that. So we would do things that looked pretty much identical, except suddenly it looked a lot better than the phone because we were using, you know, Super 35 cameras and switchers and graphics and everything else, but it was going through the phone.
How are they doing that?
Yeah, so that can be done for both. TikTok has the same issue. So you can use the phone, kind of the analog, you know, bridge can be done with the phone, with TikTok and with Instagram. But Yellow Duck works with Instagram directly, so you can do that too.
How is the kids' TikTok stream doing?
It's been slow. The problem is that I got a job again. I was going pretty slow.
Oh. Consulting.
And so it was all fun and it was all fine and dandy, but then
Daddy
I got
has to go to work.
Yeah. Well, and then it was like it was going to be a really relaxed job. You know, it was like, you know, I'm going to work on big jobs and do all these other things. And then, of course, when you're a specialist in virtual events and COVID hits, now it's 7 days a week. 12
really?
Hours a day.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's
congrats.
Yeah,
I mean, that's good, I guess. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. I get to work on a lot of really fun jobs. So
you're saying week, the problem is you don't have the time to be a showbiz dad anymore.
Yeah, exactly. By the way,
you've slept for 3 hours. Come on, drink your coffee. We got to be on set.
we had a great opportunity to do one with ILM last week. If you go up to Industrial Light and Magic's YouTube channel, is the discussion with Dennis Muren and Phil Tippett and Joe Johnson and Lauren Peterson and Bill George. So they all discussed the making of Empire Strikes Back. So it was an online COVID discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, we got to play on that one and it's an amazing conversation. If you haven't seen it, it's pretty awesome.
This is going to be a huge opportunity for you because this is everybody's doing this now.
Yeah.
Golly.
And what you'll see there, by the way, is
reunion too.
If you spend a little effort, this isn't like any big cameras or anything. These are just good web cameras and relatively good audio.
And lighting. Lighting.
We had little lights. Yeah, we had some little lights.
Look
for
at
them.
This. Yeah.
So it was but it wasn't a very expensive kit, and they looked and sounded, I think, pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's more importantly, it's just and you'll see there was a blue elephant. When we were working with Lauren to get ready for this, we were like, you can see the other one up at the top of the frame. And there were two of them up there. And we were like, bring one down. But don't talk about it. Don't point it out. And just set it there, you know? And finally people figured out about halfway through that it was a model from Jumanji.
Oh,
but
it was hysterical.
And you could look at Phil's forever. Phil's room is
amazing. Oh my God.
And then Bill George's has got,
God.
You know,
this is awesome.
Yeah, and just killer conversations. I mean, there are some really fun conversations that they have that are pretty cool. So anyway, I would highly recommend it.
See, everybody says, don't think of a blue elephant. And I keep thinking about a blue elephant. I don't understand it. That is on, I'm sure we're going to get a takedown, but that is on ILM's YouTube feed, ILM VFX. And you just edit that out. It's like, there's no audio. Right. So you think it's without the audio, the content won't. We got taken down.
Oh, no, I heard what happened recently is that they've made changes to Content ID where if it detects a long enough amount of contiguous video, it's not even there's not even humans involved anymore. It just Content IDs them immediately. And so you can prevent it by switching more often so there's no contiguous series of video.
Good. That's exactly what I did.
What I was amazed at is there was an event that we did recently that someone sent us something that was them on the video, but we just didn't realize it was owned by somebody else. And we were just moving fast. It was last minute. They gave it to us. We played it into the show. And of course, it got Content ID'd. And what was amazing was it says, if you'd like to fix this, you can just cut it out. And so I just said, OK, go ahead, knock it out. And the edit was actually really good. Like I was like, it just was the host goes, and now we're going to see a video. Wow, that was great. You know, like it was. But there was no glitch. There was no whatever.
It was. You mean you did it on YouTube? It actually did it for you.
It did it for you on the scene change.
Nice.
So it was like, so it literally, it was, the host was like, now we're going to see the video there. It wasn't that great. And it was a funny clip, but it did it. It actually did a pretty good job of pulling it out, which is much better than it used to be because once it was there, we couldn't get it up.
Right.
You know, we couldn't get it.
You have to repost. It's a big pain.
Yeah, exactly. It was a big thing. So being able to cut it out at least was better than.
I didn't know they had that feature.
I didn't know either until it happened.
We got the tech guy show on Saturday got taken down because we were watching the NASA launch, and of course NASA's video is public domain. But the National Geographic decided they should own all NASA footage.
CNBC claimed a bunch of people who were there paying for the streams from NASA as well.
Ugh.
So to be clear, I just want to, as someone who does this a lot, it's probably not as nefarious as it sounds.
No, it's automated. I understand. Yeah.
When you build the event, it's just set to a certain thing. And there's an overall setting for all of your videos within as an owner, you know, as a channel. And so if you're not paying attention to it, it's very easy for like bars and tone, which is, you know, just color bars and hearing. That's
taken down a lot.
You put that on a live feed and you'll get a ping from like Paramount, NBC.
God.
There's a whole bunch. Now what it was is that it was on some show. It was the beginning of some show that they put up, and it just happened to be in something that they claimed the whole show, and it just happens to be there, and so it gets picked up. But that's why we had to start building creative versions of that bars and tones
that's
to make
ridiculous.
Sure that we could run them in tests.
Yeah. That is automated Content ID is ridiculous. National Geographic realized, or YouTube realized, and the video was back up like a day or two later. But that's a lot of views that are gone.
My guess is the reason it was a day or two later was probably because they couldn't find the person with the admin account. Like, no, I'm not kidding.
It wasn't just me. A lot of people, including NASA itself. So they got it was a little bit of a black mark, I have to say. I know you and I understand why it happens, but it's not a good thing.
No. Yeah, I don't understand how. Well, so there's I can't get into it too much, but there's processes that didn't need to happen. Like there's things that NASA could have done to make sure that didn't happen.
Oh, OK. But why should NASA or I or anybody have to do that? That's stupid.
Well, it's non-equitable on YouTube's side. Like these companies lose nothing by making just blanket requests, and there's no disincentive.
I know.
Things work well. Things work better for people who decide what works versus what's fair. So you just have process. We have definitely have processes for high visibility events that would make sure that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And there's ways to do that. So there's ways to make sure that doesn't happen.
Your office hours, could I learn those methods?
Not that I can't talk about too much, but we'll have a private conversation at some other time.
Because I sure would like to know. It happens way too much to us, and it actually costs us money. Fortunately, I didn't build this business on YouTube views. There is a guy who did, though, Mr. Rene Ritchie. But all his content's original. It doesn't hurt him, right?
It does, because I show clips from like Apple and Samsung and all these other companies, and I've learned to keep them very short, to move between them a lot, to change them up a lot, and you have to be careful.
Yeah.
And I attribute everything, you know, on screen and in the description.
Attribution would help if we're humans, but I don't know if it helps with automated content.
No, but I mean, like, I think the default wisdom now is like, unless you did something wrong and you know you did something wrong, just protest immediately, like protest loudly immediately. Yeah. And most often the company knows, like, no, we're not going to waste a penny on this.
Right. Good. What's your pick of the week, Mr. Ritchie?
So I have to admit, I've been struggling with this a lot lately. And, you know, I've been told to stay in my tech lane and also, like, is my job to provide escapism.
Yeah, you're not a human. Thinking that there's, stay in your tech lane.
Yeah, no, I'm a dancing robot monkey.
Yeah.
I also am cognizant of the fact that for a lot of people, like, escapism is a luxury of choice that they don't have.
Right.
So I want to make sure that as much as I continue to do what I'm doing, because I have commitments and I have to, you know, I have to show up and do the things that I promised to show up and do, that I'm also trying to use whatever voice I have to share other people who have much better things to say right now. And this is a Twitter video. It's not a YouTube video yet, as far as I know, but it's a Twitter video called Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. And it basically just starts stepping you through almost Q&A style from his point of view, and I think it's safe to say the point of view of a lot of people, you know, why things are the way they are from their point of view, why they feel the way they feel, the sort of struggles and challenges that they have, because a lot of people, it's so hard to get that point of view. And I think if everybody stops and thinks for a moment, there's always been some point in their life where they felt, you know, lessened or held down. And it's only been a moment, but a lot of people deal with that every day, every moment of every day. And once you can make that empathic connection and you can actually start listening, it's incredibly educational and transformative. And he does such a great job, and he's just beginning, and I really hope he continues. But just to start off that conversation from, you know, Not everyone, certainly there are people who are problematic, but some people are just ignorant, and not in like the insulting terms way, but in the classical term, like we just don't know any better, and you can't fix anything if you don't know. And so stuff like this is just invaluable.
Yep. I'm glad he did this. This is great. I'm actually watching it right now. This is really good. Renee, you are really good. Everybody should subscribe to your YouTube channel, because God knows that's a hard way to make a living. YouTube.com/Renee Ritchie. Of course, you're doing the right thing, which is you're putting out excellent content. And I think in the long run, that's how you win. YouTube.com/Renee Ritchie. He's at Renee Ritchie on Twitter. Did you retweet Emmanuel Acho's video?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you go to his Twitter feed, you can get that.
I'm not doing tech today. I'm not doing any videos today. I'm just trying to amplify as much as I can today. Yeah. And also, it's a struggle, because some people think you should be silent and some people think you should speak up. I'm trying to do a little bit of both, because I'm also cognizant that I can get away with saying things that people who are in these situations can't. And it's part of all of our jobs to take those hits when we can take them as well. So I want to try and get create as much space as I can, but also help occupy that space as much as I can.
Yep. Yep. Let's see. Thank you, Andy Anacco. You're going to be on WGBH Boston this week, or is this week timeout?
I'm in the timeout corner this weekend. This Friday, the governor needs my half hour for I don't know
talking
public interest stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's a pandemic, and also there's outrage in the streets. Yeah. And apparently, that's more important than whatever I was going to say. I'm not here to question. I just do as I'm told. But I'm going to be next week at my usual time, Friday at 11:30 a.m. at WGBHnews.org. Stream it live or later.
Nice. And of course, Alex Lindsay's office hours are every morning, bright and early. Find out more on his YouTube feed. That's youtube.com/AlexLindsay, LINDSAY. His other 20 hours of the week, of the day, I should say, are devoted to 090 Media, 090.media. And he's on Twitter, Alex Lindsay. Anything else you want to plug?
Nope, that's it.
Good. Thank you for doing those. I got it. I'm going to set the alarm tomorrow.
They're just fun. They're just fun.
I like sleeping in. I don't know what it is about that, but I do.
I like getting up. I'm up at usually 4:30.
Yeah.
I really like a couple hours of dark. Like, and now, especially in the summer, you have to get up really early so that you have a little bit of time of dark. I like to see the sun. I have a nice view, so I really like to see the sunrise. So yeah.
Yeah. We thank you all for being here. We hope you stay safe, you stay well, and you help make the world a better place this week and every week. We're glad you could spend this time with us. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you want to tune in and watch, you can. There's a live video and audio stream. Goes all the time at YouTube, or sorry, twit.tv/live. That actually is aggregation of all the different live feeds because there's several. You can pick the one you like. It's going all the time. If you want to listen to live audio, you can also ask your Amazon Echo or your Google Home, you know, play Twit Live, and it'll, you know, whatever's going on at the moment, it'll play that. So that's a nice way to get some people in your house talking at you. You can also chat with our chat room. They're there 24/7 at irc.twit.tv. After the fact, our show goes up on the website, twit.tv/mbw for Mac Break Weekly. You can download audio and video there. We're also on YouTube. If we haven't been taken down, and you know, you never know. And some, there's other stuff there too. I hear, if you can't find Mac Break Weekly, you should also, if you would subscribe in your favorite podcast client, that way you don't have to even think about it. You just say, I got some time. Let me listen to Mac Break Weekly. We're here every week for you. Thanks for being here. And we will see you next time. But I'm sorry to say it's time to go back to whatever it was you were doing earlier. If it's work, go back to work because break time is over. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, folks. I am Micah Sargent, co-host of Tech News Weekly right here on the Twit Network. Yes, Tech News Weekly is a show we do every week, Jason Howell and myself, where we talk to people who are making and are breaking the tech news. That's right. It's journalists, it's inventors, it's app makers, it's everybody who's bringing the tech news in a given week. It's all the stuff you want to know about in bite-sized chunks in a fantastic package. So be sure to subscribe. It's twit.tv/TNW.